Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
David Solomon, thank you so much, and welcome aboard to a very special Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. It's International Jazz Day, my friend. Ooh, the festivities are underway in Istanbul, Turkey. And Herbie Hancock wanted to make it a very special tribute to the former ambassador, the late, the great Mehmet Ertegun, who opened his doors to so many in the jazz community back in the day when that really wasn't welcomed so much. But Herbie never forgot, did his own research, and he thought what a fitting tribute it would be to have this particular International Jazz Day on someone's homeland who had so much peace in his heart when he had these big jazz parties. So, as it turned out, Mehmet Ertegun's sons, one of whom was Ahmet Ertegun, formed Atlantic Records. Both sons got involved in music, and they followed their dad's footsteps in the way of peace. Just love that story. Just love the idea that Slim Man will be with us, too, next hour. Woohoo! So, we've got a combination of things going on here today. We're going to play music from some of the artists who are gathering in Istanbul today, and we're going to play Slim Man music and hear what he has to say about things going on with him. So let's get the ball rolling, shall we, as is the usual case. And since we have so many of what I like to call the old guard and the new kids in town at this site in Istanbul today, we're going to go first to the old guard, Ramsey Lewis, Wade in the Water on Hybrid Jazz. Welcome. This is Hybrid Jazz.
Thank you.
A delight when we can get to play you, Masekela and Company. Oh my, what good company that was too. 2005, the name of the track with the South African singer Meleka. Open the Door from Revival from 2005, and that was when you, Masekela, was what, 66? He's 74 now. Woo, doggies, I love that. Trumpeter, cornet player, flugelhornist. Got to be careful how you say that, and composer. He surrounded himself with some of South Africa's finest producers and musicians for this. And I just get so tickled because whenever I think of you, Masekela, I think of my son. They both share a birthday on April the 4th. And it's just so very cool because Hugh Masekela not only is revered in his country, but actually, now we have a new reason to love him. His wonderful son, Sal Masekela, who is 41, ESPN announcer and also humanitarian like Dad. I love this. I just found this out within the past 24 hours. Sal Masekela is very heavily involved in the Lunchbox Fund in South Africa, and that means that they get organic food, nutrition, whatever they can do to make sure that at-risk youth has a proper balanced meal or two during the day so that they aren't so at risk anymore. So I just felt like this was another reason to celebrate International Jazz Day. And you, Masekela, at the age of 74, is in Istanbul, Turkey, as we speak. Man, it's just so exciting because actually some parts of the show that Herbie Hancock and crew have together is happening pretty much at the same time as Hybrid Jazz right now. So that's lovely. Yeah. We heard Terry Lynn Carrington, also part of the proceedings today in Turkey. Very special from her grand project, Money Jungle, Provocative in Blue. Taking the part of the original project, Money Jungle, back in 1963. And yes, it has been 50 years since Duke Ellington did this particular endeavor. He wanted to let people know, visionary that he was, that as much as we all love music and as much as we want to have the creative freedom to make music the way we hear it in our minds, that great temptation of money is always there to impede the progress of more creativity. And I think that you know what I'm saying here. Sometimes the offer of money can change a person's perspective as to their heart and soul about what the music should be. So in that original project, it was Duke Ellington on piano, Max Roach on drums, and Charles Mingus on bass. This time around, it's Terry Lynn Carrington on drums as band leader. Gerald Clayton, who we all know from a few weeks ago, wasn't that a wonderful interview? God, I love him. On piano, doing the Duke Ellington part, and Christian McBride from Philadelphia, thank you very much, on bass. Terry Lynn wanted to have a little bit of a dream team to recreate that magic, and indeed she did. Ramsey Lewis to start. At the age of 77, there he was back in 1966, Wade in the Water. And just so you know, you might not know this, in that project, and of course Wade in the Water is what you would call a Negro spiritual, first published in the new Jubilee Songs, Fisk Jubilee, by the way, 1901, written by John Wesley Work II and his brother Frederick. Ramsey Lewis took that, certainly made something amazing and massive out of it because it won a Grammy for a song on the album of the same name for best R&B group performance, either in a vocal or instrumental category. Wade in the Water was a big song, and other people, of course, have named that one of their favorite songs. And in that project was Maurice White doing drums, who replaced Red Holt. And, of course, you know who Maurice White is. He was the originator, let's use that word, for Earth, Wind, and Fire. And even though he's not with the group in a touring capacity because of his Parkinson's disease, Maurice was very smart. He still has the executive control over Earth, Wind, and Fire and their decisions. That's a smart man. God bless him. God bless everybody. Everybody's getting my blessing today because everybody is so special. Let's enjoy life, shall we? Slim Man's going to bring that home for you next hour. Hello to my guests, Griselda and Beach, my bride of Funkenstein, Steen, if you prefer, and Matt just entered the building, and guests, thank you very much. Look, just so you know, this International World Day is a big deal. Now, we just heard you, Masekela, South Africa being represented. Certainly Terry Lynn Carrington and Ramsey Lewis, part of the American Coalition. But my new friend on Facebook, Lavtina Polyakova from Moscow, trombonist and singer, is also over there today. And representing the French side of things, from France, Jean-Luc Ponty, who is, I'm looking up the ages of all these folks. Jean-Luc Ponty is 70, and of course we've got the new guard and the old guard representing today. He, Jean-Luc, is being reunited with his old friend George Duke today. They go back to the 60s, and this song goes back to the 70s, 1977. You'll appreciate this, Mirage from Enigmatic Ocean on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you.
before Matt, this is Hybrid Jazz.
Black Radio. sucker never play me. Triple shade of black that my bleach should never fade me. They say he crazy, New York raised him in the 80s. Killer catch administration, gangster renovation, corner isolation, Asian ill communication, Asian Marvel, fight by Ivan, pestilential, microscopic soul, sonic remedy, clinic right in the street, operator in the dark, surgery of wounded heart, come together, pill apart, come together, smoking on something good, praying for something better, from out of better, never rocking for forever, ever, 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 forever, ever, ever. It's still a secret even when you tell them dumb dummies. Hush money, rent receipts, and drug money, the cold blooded warm gun money, the chief rocker, fuel injector, Zulu horse, papa love, boogie, bay, 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 you rockin', yes, you are rockin' with the fresh, you are rockin' with the depth, you are rockin' with the best, you are rockin' with the yes. Now you are rockin' with the fresh, you're rockin' with the depth, you are rockin' with the fresh. It's a yes, you are rockin' with the best, you are rockin' with the fresh, you are rockin' with the depth, you are rockin' with the yes. Now you are rockin' with the best, you're rockin' with the fresh, you are rockin' with the depth, it's the yes.
Fly down in the mountain pass. Only thing to survive the crash. Black radio. You wanna fly free, go far and fast. Built the last, we made this craft. From black radio. Black radio. Black radio. Black radio. Black radio.
You're rocking. Yes, you are rocking with the fresh. You are rocking with the depth. You are rocking with the best. You are rocking with the fresh. Now you are rocking with the best. You're rocking with the depth. You are rocking with the best. It's a yes. You are rocking with the fresh. You are rocking with the depth. You're rocking with the best. You are rocking with the fresh. Now you are rocking with the depth. You're rocking with the best. You are rocking with the fresh. It's a yes. You're rocking with the best. You're rocking with the depth. You're rocking with the best. You are rocking with the best. Now you are rocking with the best. You're rocking with the depth. You are rocking with the best. It's a yes. Yes. Yeah.
We covered a lot of musical territory in 4 minutes and 51 seconds in that song, did we not? Mercy, yes. Now, stay with me now. It's going to take a little talent to let you know what you just heard. Robert Glasper on the keyboard, Mercy, and company including Yasin Bey, otherwise known as Mos Def. That was Black Radio, sort of the title track of Black Radio Recovered, the remix, which is an EP in conjunction with Robert Glasper's Black Radio. Hope you stayed with me. Now, the interesting thing, let's just pick one, shall we, about Robert Glasper. You talk about the new guard. It's so interesting to see how this young man's career, he's 35, his birthday was April the 5th, by the way, just turned 35 and making an impact. Now, some people are aghast at the impact that Robert Glasper is making, but it would seem that most, even the most hardened traditionalists, are joyful in that he is breathing new life into a genre that Robert at one time said publicly needed it so badly. Now, he has the right, because Mama raised him on jazz, and Mom was not only a jazz aficionado, but an artist as well. So little Robert would go with Mom to the clubs and hang out while Mama was playing. So he got a taste of jazz early on, and then he got trained classically, and then he got to play with some of the most powerful cats in young jazz and hip-hop around. So at one point he said, I feel like jazz needs a big ass slap. By God, he did it with this album. And even the most cautious or conservative, a word that I really don't like to use, of publications, not necessarily saying that Downbeat is one of them, but there was an issue of Downbeat not that long ago where they had a reader's poll, which they are very famous for doing. And they're just all over the place in their praise of Robert Glasper because he's doing things in such a unique way. So his wish is coming true that folks are really thinking out of the box. And honestly, he put a fire under some butts that needed to get that fire lit. So he is part of the ensemble. Here's Robert Glasper playing with Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter today in Istanbul, Turkey. That's exciting. Yes. We also heard from Ben Williams, another new cat on the scene in a big, fat way from 2011's State of Art. That's Ben on the D.C.-based bass. We love the fact that he's from D.C., 28 years old. His take on Moonlight in Vermont, Jazz Journalists Association Award winner, and man, this young man is just, he's got a future, can I just say? A few weeks ago, now what, a couple of months ago now, at the Grammy Awards, he shared in the absolute celebration of Pat Metheny, because Ben Williams is part of Pat Metheny's Unity Band. So Pat Metheny will get a mention again during the show because he did something wonderful for Esperanza at one point in her career. But Ben is over there as well in Turkey and just loving life, because it just seems like no matter what he's touching these days, it's turning into gold. Love it. Jean-Luc Ponty, Ponty.com has some fascinating information for you if you want to know more about Jean-Luc. He is 70. He had this beautiful, very much discussed project in 1977 called Enigmatic Ocean, showing off his virtuoso violin skills and composing skills. If you don't know the history, let's just wrap it up in a short space of time. A classical background, very much a lover of jazz, very much loving the idea of jazz and rock being together. And back in the 60s, 1967, he played at the Monterey Jazz Festival, just created a firestorm of love and passion. When he played the violin, it was like when some people were seeing other people play saxophone or an amazing jazz guitar. no one was used to this. And then got together with George Duke, and there was a crazy butt concert back in California. And here was George and Jean-Luc playing, and Frank Zappa was there, and a host of other jazz and rock personnel. And Jean-Luc's career just took off. He has been playing ever since. He looks really good, too. Man, loving the older men recently. That's a good thing, I guess. But he is there today as well. And what kind of reunion is this for some of the folks that have been described and will be described? I know George Duke is just loving life. Man, just savoring the idea of making music together with these guys, Robert Glasper and Ben Williams. It's such a trip. Slim Man is coming your way at the top of next hour. He's got more good news. It's a really good day to have Slim in the house because he'll get pumped with all this energy about International Jazz Day. And we are not going to leave the ladies out of this. I was a little concerned because some weeks ago I saw Diane Reeves' name, and I'm thrilled that she's part of today, but somebody must have gotten the notion that maybe there needed to be more female names added. So there was. Don't know the circumstances about that, but it just seems the natural thing for us to do, to jump from Robert Glasper and Mos Def, Yasiin Bey, into Keiko Matsui. This is going back now to 2004. You talk about a hybrid artist putting together electronica and her spiritual way of looking at things and playing the piano and jazz and the classical background she had. Woo! One of the shiros of Japan, Keiko Matsui, on Hybrid Jazz.
in the way you look at me stirs my soul. Something in your touch just makes me weak. I could never live without your love. It's the kind of love I've been dreaming of. Every time I hear you speak my name, melts my heart. Just the thought of you and I see flames burning, burning deep inside. There is no doubt. Got to tell you what it's all about. It's all about love. It's all about trust, baby. I give you my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. It's all about love. It's all about trust, baby. I give you my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. Yes, I do. Every time you leave, you take a part of me. I can't stand the pain. When you're gone, the sunshine fades away. Fades away. What to do? I couldn't do it now. I've got to tell you what it's all about. It's all about love. It's all about trust, baby. I give you my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. It's all about love. It's all about trust, baby. I give you my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. Yes, I do. It's all about love, babe. something in the way you look at me stirs my soul. Something in your touch just makes me weep. What to do, I couldn't do it now. Got to tell you what it's all about. It's all about love. It's all about trust, baby. Give you my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. It's all about love. It's all about trust, baby. Give you my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. It's all about love. It's all about trust, baby. Give my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. It's all about love. It's all about trust, baby. Give you my heart, cause I have a lot of faith in love. I have a lot of faith in love.
George Ezra, Johnny Cole, Mambo Hernandez, ladies and gentlemen, Marc Antoine.
You know, it's going to be a good show when you get to play Keiko Matsui, followed by Christian Atunde Ajua, and then Slim Man. I love the show. Love that CD, Slim Man Live, ladies and gentlemen. And just so you know who we have in the house, the multi-instrumentalist, that composer of rare renown, that bon vivant, that man about town, that new Nashvillian, Slim Man. Hey, baby!
Crystalis.
How are you?
I'll be okay in a couple of years. You know.
No, we can't wait that long. You're good now. You got some stuff going on. Oh, I should have said, one of the stars of the TV show Nashville, ladies and gentlemen. Please.
Please. I had a teeny small, like, if you blink your eyes, you miss it, non-speaking role on a television show called Nashville, but you never know what's going to end up on the cutting room floor, but maybe it'll make it to the final cut, but you never know. But
stop
you from trying.
And look, you got involved in this, and somebody approached you to flesh out that extra role. That happened to me with Violets Are Blue, shot in Ocean City, Maryland, until a pigeon crapped on my head, and then they had to eliminate the tape.
Yeah, well, I know what you mean. I'm used to crap on the head, so...
Well, it's good to know that you're facing the day with such optimism, young man. So how did this Temecula Wine and Music Festival all come to be? I was very impressed.
I guess they got desperate. You know, they must have just had somebody else cancel, figured out, you know, call Slim Man at the last minute. He's always available.
No, they did not. But I do have to say, and I won't belabor this point, I will say that after your picture was on the billboard that they had, because this is coming up this weekend, this is going back a few weeks now, there was a major player that was going to be part of this festival that canceled because all of a sudden there was an illness. But now I see the same artist is doing other gigs. I'm just saying that you are an intimidating factor.
I don't know what you're talking about, Trish, but...
Yes, you do.
I'm just happy to be included. That's all I got to say.
And look, just the company.
Just happy to be part of the show.
Patrice Rushen and Greg Karukas and Brenda Russell? Holy cow.
I know.
I don't think that you mind too much being surrounded by those ladies.
No, they're quite talented, you know. They are quite talented gals indeed.
I know. So what is life like, seriously? Having lived in Nashville twice, what is life like for you now that you have had quite a few months there? And what is different from Baltimore? She guffawed as she asked.
It's been a couple of years, actually, Trish, that I've been here, believe it or not. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, I didn't know that.
No, it's been a couple of years, and I'm just, you know, just enjoying life at the trailer park. And I'm here with the dog, and, you know, life is all right.
I
love Nashville. I do love it here.
And why is that? I mean, you and I correspond privately, and you tell me, but tell folks why that is. What is happening in Nashville now?
Well, the good thing is that nobody knows who I am, so I can kind of go about town without too much hoo-ha. But it's a great town. It's a great music town. There are a lot of wonderful folks here. People are friendly. It moves a little slow, but it's good. It's good. It's good. I mean, it's great to be in a town where music is the focus, and you just don't get that in a lot of other towns. Even in the major towns like Los Angeles and New York, you don't get quite the focus on music. I mean, it's in the forefront of everything. I mean, it's, you know, people on radio talk about it, and people on TV talk about it, and, you know, Brad Paisley appears over here, and they talk about it, and Dwight Yoakam's over there, and they talk about it, and there's, not only that, they talk about the, you know, the up-and-comers, and this is a town that seems to be these days especially, seems to be a springboard for up-and-coming new talent, and it's not all about the, you know, the old-school, old-guard, you know, folks like, you know, the Garth Brooks and the Reba McEntires, although those folks are very extremely talented and successful. It seems to be these days that it's a springboard for a lot of new up-and-coming talent, and it's not all country music. I mean, most of the bands that I've seen that I really like are not country. And if they are country, they're such a weird hybrid that it doesn't sound like, you know, Hank Williams Sr. or Jr.
Oh, no. But I will say, though, that there is an interesting mix, having lived there twice and being part of that 1990s whole Americana alternative country scene. I really love that. And there is a lot of what you would call the alternative country happening, because I keep in touch with those folks all the time. And I think that I mentioned Martha Moore to you. She's got her publicity agency called So Much More, and she works with these acts. But you know what? I have to say, now that, God rest his soul, George Jones has passed away, and there's going to be a huge public viewing, I think, but there's going to be a big service on Thursday in Nashville at the Grand Ole Opry Place.
Really?
Yeah, there are a lot of folks, and this is part of the Americana scene too, and you can back me up or not about this, but there are a whole lot of folks who are appreciating the roots of country music. I just heard a gal the other day on Garrison Keillor's show, Prairie Home Companion, and she's in her 20s, and my God, Slim. I forget her name because, oh my God, there's so many names in my head right now, but she sounded like old country, but she just got signed to a label. They are pushing that old sound to make it sound new.
Yeah, a lot of people are getting away from the, you know, the very slick, well-produced, you know, polished to a high sheen kind of music in all styles. I don't think that really quite holds up. People these days, they want to hear it real. They don't want to have it all just polished to a high sheen. They want stuff that sounds kind of gritty and down to earth. And a lot of that has to do with back to recording the way that they used to record years and years ago, which is, you know, with guys in the studios with open mics, and it's not a whole lot of using the same old slick studio session guys and the same old slick studios and with the same old slick producers and stuff like that. I mean, a lot of the folks that are making noise are folks that sound like they just got dropped out of a time capsule from, I don't know, the 50s or 60s or something. It's true.
I know. And I'm glad to hear that, because for a while, and having worked in country radio back then, for a while, when Restless Heart, the group Restless Heart, which defined contemporary country back in the 80s, when they came on the scene, everybody got so pumped. And I swear to you, up until recently, it seemed like any time I heard an ensemble production coming out of Nashville that was on country radio, they were trying for that Restless Heart sound. And, and it's changing, though. You know it is, because now there's just so many types of music in Nashville. It is pretty exciting, isn't it?
It is. I mean, most of the stuff that I see, I mean, it's amazing. I see all kinds of music. I see great rock bands. I see great retro, you know, R&B bands, great retro soul bands. The only thing that I really don't see is jazz in any form. I mean, I just don't see it here. I just don't. I don't think I've seen one jazzy type band at all. Not one. I mean, that's, and I don't know why that is. I mean, it's certainly a, you know, a viable format. It's just, I've seen everything but.
Now, my friend Dan Balog tells me the opposite, because he has seen some jazz acts play in Baltimore. I got to get you guys together. And then there is a new neighborhood that is undergoing a renaissance where Dan and his wife Carrie live. It's within like a stone's throw of Shoney's near Music Row, but across the bridge a little bit, and apparently there's an intent to make that like a jazz row of clubs.
Yeah, there it hasn't really caught on. That neighborhood of East Nashville is just hot, but it's if there was something happening, I have a feeling that I would know about it, but you know, I haven't heard of anything other than places that have people singing jazz standards, which is, you know, there's nothing new about that or exciting to me. I mean, I love those songs, and they're near and dear to my heart, and I listen to all those recordings of, you know, the old Chet Baker, Nat King Cole, Louis Armstrong, and Ella Fitzgerald, and all that stuff, but it's nothing really kind of new and fresh coming out in the jazz world, but a lot of great stuff coming out in every other genre.
Well, that's somebody needs to light a fire up that collective arse then in Nashville, because that's just ridiculous.
I guess if there were an audience for it, it would be happening. But right now, it's, you know, what you have in Nashville is you have, obviously the country folks and the country fans, and then you have the whole, like, hipsters that seem to be flocking into town by the billions, you know, the guys with the plaid shirts and the skinny jeans and the long beards and the big black square glasses and the, you know, beanie caps and stuff that, you know what I mean?
Not exactly,
guys.
But I'm thinking of the imagery. Okay.
Yeah, and you have like a million of those guys, but there aren't a lot of, there's not a whole lot of jazz. But it's okay with me.
Well, it's not okay with me. See, I'm glad you told me
all
that,
right?
Because I was thinking twice about maybe, you know, thinking if T gets out of school within a reasonable time, it might be a good idea to relocate. But no,
that would be great. This town needs you, Trish.
Well,
look, you, hon.
Let me tell you something, honey. I've done stuff by myself, and I'm not going to do that anymore. The pioneer spirit is certainly in me. Don't get me started. If you get the idea running about your own restaurant, your own gourmet Italian restaurant on top of those high buildings right in downtown Nashville and do a radio station next to it, I'm all for it.
Perfect. We'll get it together.
Oh, yeah.
We'll call it Trish and a Dish.
You know what? There are some really good call letters within that idea there. We have to figure that out.
W-T-A-D, Trish and Dish.
T-A-D, W-T-A-D, Trish and Dish. I love it.
That's it.
So this is pretty exciting. You're going to be coming back to Baltimore. How long are you going to stay?
I'll probably come in a couple of days before, and I'll probably stay a couple of days after. I love Baltimore. It's, you know, my hometown, and all my friends and family are in and around Balmer.
I know.
And, I've got the big show at La Scala on Tuesday, May 14th.
Yep.
At 6:30, and then I'll come in a couple of days before and probably stay till the end of the week and then come back to Music City, USA.
Now, are you going to be flying in or are you going to do the drive with Batu?
I got to bring Batu because, you know, he's got a lot of friends there too, and I just don't want to cut him out of the picture, you know what I mean?
I know. I think about that all the time. But I laugh.
My dog has more friends than I do back there, so...
And listen, how's that romance coming with Batu and his girl?
They broke up.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah, he broke up with his girl. Yeah, he's got a new male friend. I don't know what's going on there. I think he might have switched teams on me, but that's okay. Nothing wrong with that, hon.
Right. Yes, as long
is.
As you know he's a happy dog.
As long as he's happy. That's
yep.
Right.
That's right.
As long as he's happy, I'm happy.
Oh, my gosh. So how does it usually work with Batu? Does he get the back seat, all of the back seat, and he...
When I drive, this is a true story, I drive, I put his bed in the back, and no exaggeration, for 5 hours, I can drive, and I will not hear a peep. I mean, sometimes I got to really, literally reach back and feel, make sure he's breathing. He's so laid back. I mean, he's just a laid back and wonderful kind of dog. And then I let him out, give him a little bit of water, and then put him back in the car and then finish the trip. But he's just a champ when he's in the car. I mean, but he's been driving with me for a long time. I mean, whenever, you know, even when I was back in Baltimore, I was always taking trips. Whenever I could, you know, anything 5 or 6 hours, I would take him along with me. So what about when I went up to visit my dad up in New York, I'd take him along. When I went to shoot, you know, cooking videos in New York, I take him along. So he's used to the car, and he loves going for a drive. So my dog, Batu, he digs being on the road.
He's a road dog.
He's road dog.
Oh, my gosh. And you know, I think about you because my friend Kevin Matthews is the creator of his new business called The Dog Chef. And he actually cooks and does organic meals for dogs. And one of these days, since he is in Baltimore and he goes back and forth to New York, I've got to set you two up because I can imagine you setting your own business up for dogs in Neshpatch, USA. That would be a natural for you.
You know... No.
Okay.
I say no. When you start cooking for your dog, that kind of crosses the border into. So, I mean, Batu, he's my dog and I love him, but he's a dog. You know what I mean? I don't try to cook for him or dress him up in crazy clothes. I did teach him how to sing, which is kind of cool, but. I'm a little worried. I mean, he's got a new CD coming out, and I'm kind of concerned that his CD might sell more than mine because, you know, he's got more fans on Facebook than I do, so that's really kind of worrisome.
Now,
but
listen, if you wake up...
He's a dog. I'm not going to cook for him. I mean, he's a dog. You know what I mean? I let him out, I let him in, but I don't, put him on a pedestal or cook for him or anything like that.
Okay, well, that's not your gift. I mean, there are...
No, it's not my gift.
It's not your gift. Yeah. Right. And
I mean,
and
not that, you know, if it came down to it, you know, I had to cook for him for some special reason, of course I'd do it. But right now, I just take a scoop out of his big bag of dog food and put it on the floor, and then take a scoop out of the dog food for me, and I put it on the floor. We eat together.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, Kevin has done great things. Thank God that Batu is healthy. There are some dogs, and I've seen them on Kevin's website and on his Facebook page, that dogs that are sick, and they've gotten sick suddenly, and because he knows the right kind of nutrients to put in the dogs, they have come back literally from the dead. So
yeah,
I just love that.
I've been there. I mean, Batu had some serious problems and serious health problems. Yeah, he did. He had some serious health problems. And about a year ago, about this time, I was thinking, you know what, I might just have to put him down. He was just so, I mean, even the vet said, your dog's in bad shape, son. So we put him on a special diet, but it was just a special prescription dog food that cost like $7,000 a bag. But it's hypoallergenic dog food. And, you know, people that don't have dogs, you know, probably listen to this going, what the heck? But, you know, when you have a dog, it's just, I don't know, you just want them to be happy and you want them to be healthy. And you do what you can to get them that way. And I understand that, you know, if somebody wants to cook for their dog. I mean, my grandmother used to cook for her dog, and I thought she was cuckoo, but for doing that, I'm not.
But you loved her.
But I understand that people, you know, people love their pets, people love their kids, and, you know, it's, you know, when you have something in your life that's, you know, kind of dependent on you, whether it's a child or a dog, you just want to do the best for that living entity to do the best you can. So,
absolutely.
I understand it.
Now, what was it? Slim, let me ask you this. Was it that you found that Batu was allergic to stuff? Is that what it was?
He had problems with his feet, and he had these cysts that were growing between his toes, and he couldn't walk, and he couldn't get around, and he looked like he was on death's doorstep.
Oh, my gosh.
And, I'd done a ton of research, found a doctor that specialized in his breed with that disease, and she was up in Pennsylvania. And finally, I went to a doctor here in Nashville, and he said, you know, why don't we try everything? So we tried an antifungal and anti-this and an anti-that and all these medicines that he gave him, and put him on hypoallergenic food, and he got better. And he's been great for a year. I mean, he's just great. And, you know.
Thank God.
Not a day goes by that I'm like, hey, this is great. Good for him and good for me.
Oh, that's great. Gosh, I didn't know he was that sick. I mean, I knew that.
Yeah, it was that bad.
Wow.
I called the doc and said, you know, if we got to put him down, we're going to get a 2-for-1. I'm going with him. You know what I mean? We'll just get you know what I mean? That's it. He goes, I go.
Oh, my God. You know, I do think about that because you are so close to that faithful companion. And he's so content. And he loves the back seat because he knows you're driving.
Yeah. You know, like I said, he is a dog. He's a dog. You know, he's not, you know, I don't pretend that he's, you know, anything but a dog, but it's nice to have a companion like that. And, you know, it's not like he's the only thing in my life. I do have a friend or two that I, you know, keep in regular contact with, and I have the music as well. It's, you know, but you know what the cool thing is that Batu loves music, and I had a writing session yesterday with a young gal named Bonner Black, and this kid's on the way. And she's, you know, she sat on the couch, and Batu sat on the couch with her, and we started working on a song with a friend of mine, Ben Jones, guy from London, and we're writing a song, and Batu's just, he fell asleep. You know, we were there, we were singing loud and playing guitars, and Batu fell asleep and started snoring, and, you know, we recorded the song, and there he was in the background, and he hears a Batu snoring in the background. But he loves music, and he's, you know, luckily I can take them just about any studio where I go to, and it's cool. But
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm glad that, because he's been around for a while, and
9 years on the 5th of May will be his 9th birthday, Cinco de Mayo.
Oh, wow. 9 years.
Yeah.
God bless you. And that's the day after Temecula. So,
yeah, Temecula.
Temecula.
Yeah.
Temecula.
Temecula, yeah, that's the way they pronounce it. I don't know why, but that's, I'm sure it has to do with some kind of, sounds like an Indian name to me, but
yeah,
I don't really
think,
know. But it's a beautiful, beautiful wine country east of San Diego, and it's lovely. It really, really is.
You know,
to be able to go out there and listen to music and to drink wine. I mean, you know, people do get a little crazy because, you know, you sit out there in 82 degrees and you're drinking wine at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Hey,
get a little fried.
You know, that's what it's, hey, if it's going to be called the Wine and Music Festival, you best believe there will be samples. Are there not samples of different kinds of wine?
I don't know, but I'll find out.
Because that's why people come. I mean, the music is one thing, but look, if you're going to call yourself a wine and music festival, you best believe there will be consumption of the wine. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, and they've got some good wines. I wouldn't call them great wines, but they're good. They're good.
Hmm.
I mean, they've got some good whites, good reds, good sparkling. You know, it's a beautiful area. It's, you know, it's worth a trip if you're out there in San Diego or Palm Springs or wherever, going down to Temecula. It is really beautiful. I love it there.
Yeah, no doubt. Listen, one of the regulars, actually my friend Yolanda Bell, who's a wonderful photographer, she was also Baltimore-based, and now she is living in Southern California. So she might take the trek to come and see you. You'll know because she'll be snapping pictures.
Oh, great. Well, there's going to be someone else snapping pictures there for Mad Magazine. They're doing a little photo spread for me.
Get out of here. And why are you, this is so curious, why are you on at 1:30 in the afternoon? I love that, but why that time?
You know, I prefer that. I prefer going on second or third. I don't want to go on last. I've never enjoyed that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would enjoy, you know, playing just about anywhere. I'd go down to the street corner with my dog Batu and a cup and pretend to be blind if that's what it came down to. But I love playing anytime, but I like playing in the middle. You know what I mean? You know, people are fresh. And, you know, it's like Jimi Hendrix when he went on at Woodstock. He insisted on going last. Look what happened to him. He's playing for 22 people in muddy sleeping bags. When, you know, if he had gone on, you know, in the middle, he would have got his set in.
Now, that's
like
a point.
I prefer playing in the middle.
That's a really good point, especially if you make that analogy of Woodstock, for God's sake. yeah, people are waiting to see now, just like they are at International Jazz Day. As a matter of fact, it's happening right now, and there are different methodologies, I think, to listen. But honestly, there's interesting people across the board. And, Slim, check this out. I really did research about this. There are artists who are playing in Istanbul who are in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. Is that wild?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's what one of the great things about jazz is that it doesn't seem to be age-specific. In other words, if you're a pop star, you know, you got like a little window of opportunity, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, very rarely does it happen that you are able to sustain. But in jazz music, they don't care if you're 20 or if you're 80. I mean, the same thing with country music, really. I mean,
yes.
Like Willie Nelson, he's like 125 years old, and the people still love him. Yeah. You know what I mean? They love George Jones. They love, you know, they love the old folks in country music. They don't kick them to the curb when they reach a certain age, and that's, you know, it's comforting for a guy like me who's 94. So,
and let me tell you something, you wear that well. You do. You do.
That's all the plastic surgery I had done.
No, well, I'm saying to you about the different ages and the fact that they're playing right now is that there are so many interesting cats and kitties playing before the big acts. Of course everybody wants to see Herbie Hancock and George Duke and Wayne Shorter, but there are some really interesting people who are playing before these folks, and some of these people in Istanbul are coming to see those acts and going home to have dinner, you know?
Yeah, well, there's something to be said for that, Trish, the dish, and I think that that's, you know, that's a good point that you make, is that, you know, people, I know that people like to hear artists that they're familiar with, you know, the ones that are popular, and people also like to feel like they're in on the ground floor when they see an artist that they have not seen before, who,
yes,
you know, who they can kind of claim as their own. And, you know, you see it a lot here in Nashville, and you see it a lot everywhere. Like when you're in on the ground floor of an artist and you kind of say, hey man, you know, these guys are getting ready to springboard up to the top, it kind of makes, it gives you a certain connection to a group. And I think people are receptive to new stuff, especially in this day and age.
Yes.
I mean, I just get the feeling that a lot of folks, it's just kind of, they like seeing the older, you know, the more established acts, but they like seeing people they hadn't seen before as well.
Oh, just, yes.
You know,
these and you just got finished talking about this on your Facebook page because you saw an act of a tiny venue in Nashville, and son of a gun, didn't they open up for John Mayer?
Yeah, it was like a, no exaggeration, it was about a 4 or 5 weeks ago, I saw a band called St. Paul and the Broken Bones. It was in a place called The Basement, which holds maybe 50 people.
Wow.
And I turned and I looked to a friend of mine, and we were watching this band, and this guy's a legendary record executive. He's discovered the Romantics, the Blues Travelers, Eddie James, Aaron Neville, Neville Brothers, you know, you name
what?
It, he's known it. And we both looked at each other, and he said, Star Time. I said, yeah, man, these guys are on their way. And we're sitting out there, you know, talking to them in their van. They're from Birmingham, Alabama. They were great. The guy looks like Drew Carey. He sounds like Wilson Pickett. And the band is a retro soul band. It looks like they could be backing up Otis Redding, but they're kids, you know, 18, 19 years old. And we're out there talking in the van, where are you guys headed? Oh, we got to get back. You know, we got to go, you know, play at church at 10 o'clock in the morning. So we're driving back to Alabama. And I, Patrick and I were talking on the way home. I'm like, these guys, they're on their way. It's like they're going to be like a rocket to the moon. And then, you know, four days ago, Friday, they opened up for John Mayer in Tuscaloosa. And it's just that quick. And I think that people, you know, like I said, people love hearing about new stuff. I mean, they're
mm-hmm.
open and receptive. I think that the real problem is, and I was talking to another friend of mine, Carl Griffin, the guy who signed me to Motown back, you know, 1942. He, you know, he was involved. He's a legendary guy. He discovered and signed Diana Krall, and all the way back to Evelyn Champagne King. The guy's got great ears, and he was saying the same thing that I was saying. It's the only problem is that everybody and their mother and their dog is releasing a CD these days, and you know, 92.7% of it is just not good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, and it's tough to wade through the crap to get to the gem. And I think that what happens is that when you see somebody like a St. Paul and a Broken Bones, and you see them live, and you know that there's not all kinds of studio trickery, it's like, okay, it's showtime. What do you got? You know, there you are, you know, without a net, you're playing in front of a bunch of folks, and you're going to either deliver the goods or you're not.
Exactly.
And they deliver their goods. And, you know, and I think that that's, you know, what has kind of come down to is that when you see a band and they're playing live and they're delivering, you know that whatever they got on CD is going to be, you know, it's going to be worth it. But, you know, I think that, you know, and that's part of the process is, you know, it's very difficult, especially these days, more so than any other time in the history of music, to wade through the, you know, the gobbledygook to get through to the good stuff. And I think that that's the toughest problem that people have. And I think that's why people tend to drift towards a place like Spotify and Pandora that kind of gauge your tastes and who you like and suggest people that are similar in style. And, you know, people tend to, you know, find music in different ways these days because you just can't rely on, oh, they've got a CD out, they must be good. Now, you know, 20 years ago, the level of entry was just ridiculous. I mean, for you to put out an album of music 20 years ago, you had to have somebody who was going to be willing to invest a couple $100,000 just to get 10 songs recorded. Then you'd have to find a record company or a distributor who was going to put out at least $1 million to get your word out. And so you would have to have a core group of people who were so sold on the fact that you were going to make it. And I think that that really kind of weeded out a lot of the, you know, a lot of the dentists who played saxophone in high school who want to put out a smooth jazz CD. You don't have that. You didn't have that back then. And I think the music was really, it was a lot better because you think about all the music that came out of the 70s and the 80s, you know, and even the 90s. I mean, there was just a ton of great stuff from Grover Washington Jr. to the Ohio Players to Aretha to Led Zeppelin to Hendrix to the Beatles to the Stones to, you know, all the stuff that was happening in the Motown in the 60s. You think about all the great music that was coming out in the 80s, the Prince stuff, the Michael Jackson stuff. I mean, you really had to put out a ton of money to get through the door.
And you know what? You really raise a very interesting point that has not been explored on the show, and let's just get to it. Honestly, I'd never heard anybody articulate it that way before. And here's the dilemma. This is the day and age where folks are fast and furious about touting the merits of being an independent artist. But this does not suggest that because you're an independent artist, that doesn't make you good.
No, it's true. And I think that, you know, like, that's a great point that, you know, even though you can, doesn't mean you should.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, just because you're able to put out a CD doesn't mean you should. I mean, a lot of people are just clogging up the works. And I understand that, you know, they want to, you know, you want to sell, you know, CDs to your, you know, the people you do dental work on and stuff like that. But, you know, it gets clogged up. I mean, there's a lot of people releasing a CD, and I mean, I see it all the time. I go out and I'm hanging out with, you know, record execs and, you know, managers and producers and stuff, and I can't tell you how many times people just hand you their CD. It's like, okay, here's my CD. And I can't tell you how many times you go home and you see this producer or record exec just kind of look at it and just toss it because they don't even like the cover or something. You know what I mean? It rarely even gets an ear.
Yes, certainly in Nashville, that is going to happen frequently. And
yeah.
Boy, this is going to open up a whole can of worms here. You know, it's much like looking at one of the reality shows that's a vocal competition, where some of these folks have their core of reality in thinking that they're talented. I don't know. Mama or daddy must have done a really good job in saying to them, you are so special. And that was not a blessing. That was kind of a curse.
because that's a great point. A lot of the people here, you know, are being in Nashville, and a lot of the music that's coming up are 18-year-olds who are being subsidized by their parents. I mean, they're the folks who are putting out the money to put out the CDs, to go into the studio, to, you know, pay for their kids' you know, apartments and studio time and instruments and, you know, paying their bills so that these kids can pursue their dream. And, you know, they call them down here the momagers and the dadagers rather than the managers, because they have a lot of people who are just kind of subsidizing the business. And a lot of the folks down here are the record people, you know, the people, not only the record people, the producers and the engineers and the manager, they're all kind of hip to it. And that's, you know, there, on the one hand, there is some incredible music being made these days in all genres. But on the downside, you know, you've got to wade through the, you know, the garbage to get to the gem. And that's the biggest dilemma that, you know, most people face. Not only most people face in terms of record execs and managers, producers who are looking for new stuff, but it's also a dilemma that people face when they're, you know, you want to go out there and you want to listen to something great as a consumer, as a music lover. And so many times you're just frustrated to get a CD. There's either it's all poop and or else there's just one good song on it. And that's the dilemma that happens these days, is that there's too much stuff to wait through. I think it's like 15,000 tunes a week are being uploaded to iTunes.
Oh, my.
Yeah, how are you going to get through it all? So, like, you know, it's become a word-of-mouth business, but... You know, that being said, there's a lot of great stuff out there, and when you find it and when you see it, it's like it gets viral. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden, it's like you see a band that's great, and all of a sudden they're opening up for John Mayer because, you know, all of a sudden everybody kind of gets an agreement, and there's a whole groundswell behind somebody to go out there and do what needs to be done.
Well, look, from my perspective, I have to weed through a lot of that stuff, too.
I feel sorry for you.
I feel sorry for me, too. It's heartbreaking because, guess what? I've lost friends on Facebook who don't think that I've given them a fair shot. And the situation is that if I was to play some of the music that I hear that pass through these different kinds of message portals daily, it would be a disservice to the artist who gave me the music.
Well, you know, you have to... I mean, people look to you, Trish, to be the keeper of the castle. You can't let everybody in. Otherwise, what does it become? You know, oh, I got to do a friend a favor. You're not doing anybody a favor by doing that. You're not doing that artist a favor by playing music that's mediocre. You're not doing your people that listen to your show a favor by playing stuff that's just not up to snuff.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And it's I had this problem. Somebody hit me with a message on Facebook yesterday. It's like, well, you know, how come, you know, you're not passing my music along to the people that it needs to be passed along to? And it's like, you just got to kind of get real and say, you know what, step it up a little bit. Write better songs, create better music, and you might have a better chance. But this is just not, and I've had this conversation with, you know, like my keyboard player, George Hazelrig, he's a genius, and I don't throw that word around, you know, too much at all. And he's given me projects over the last, you know, 4, 5, 6 years. And I'm like, George, it's just not floating my boat. I'm sorry. And he doesn't get all offended. He's like, do better, you know. And finally he came up with this thing a couple of months ago. He played a bunch of Hendrix tunes with a jazz piano trio, brush drums, stand-up bass, and him playing piano on Hendrix tunes. And I was like, oh, my God. It was, I mean, really good, you know, saving great for, you know, Hendrix himself. But it was really good. And I was like, okay, George, I can run with this. I can turn this on to the people that need to be turned on to. I'll be happy to play this for, you know, X, Y, and Z to try and get it some, you know, some play. But, you know, it was very difficult for me to talk to a very close friend of mine and say, you know what, it ain't cutting it.
Yeah, it is. People don't understand, and this is the other side of the coin. We were talking about, you know, some vocals, and then you're talking about George. And honestly, around here, and it must be so elsewhere, it has become very hip to have your own studio at home. And that's wonderful. And I know that one of my friends has his own studio, and I know his work, and his work is very, very good. But there's a rash of people who have their own studios, and for some reason they feel that since they do, that since they have control over their own production, it's necessarily going to be excellent. And 8 times out of 10, that's not the case.
You know, I would go even further. I'd say 9 times out of 10, and that's not really an exaggeration. I'd say about 90% of the stuff that I hear, and people send me a lot of stuff all the time, about 90% of it is it doesn't cut it. It doesn't cut it. And whether you've got a studio or not, it just doesn't cut it. I think that people need to, you know, people who are full-time doing music are putting their hearts and their lives and their livelihood on the lines. So much depends on it, and they put their hearts and souls and time and effort full-time into making music. This is not just, okay, well, you know, I'm working at the Piggly Wiggly and I'll go home for an hour a week and, you know, make a CD. It just doesn't cut it that way, especially when you listen to, and I'm very privileged to be able to listen to a lot of the stuff that crosses a lot of the big executives and producers' desks.
Mm-hmm.
And the demos that I hear that are being cut these days are amazing. In other words,
mind-blowing. Yes.
The stuff that gets through is just, the level for entry is really high, and it should be. Because
yes,
otherwise you're not doing anybody any favors. Trish, you're not doing your fans a favor by, you know, playing crap as a, you know, favor to a musician friends, and you're not doing a musician a favor by playing stuff that's not up to snuff. I mean, that's the tough conversation that you have to have with a lot of people who are in this business, you know. It ain't good enough. Go back, put your heart and soul into it, make better music, and you get a better shot.
When you're in a music mix that's, you know, featuring somebody who's doing, like, this is these three different kinds of examples. You've got a Robert Glasper who's being very much avant-garde, and then you've got Keiko Matsui, who's been playing piano since she was 4 years old, who's combining electronica and classical music with jazz. And then you've got somebody like Wayne Shorter, who is a legend. It's not that you're looking for any kind of someone to master those kinds of skills, but it has to speak to you so that you know that there is passionate musicianship involved, authenticity, some kind of blood, sweat, and tears that has gone into the production, not a throwaway situation where you've got some sort of awful production. Like, what is it called if you're using just the Pro Tools and you're not using real instrumentation in your production?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That drives me crazy.
You know, I'll play the other side of that coin, is that if you've got something to say, whether it's lyrically or musically, if you have something to say, it doesn't matter whether you record it, you know, in GarageBand or whether you record it at the greatest studio in the world. Case in point being Bob Dylan. You know, the guy can't sing, the guy can't play guitar. He's not Hendrix. He's not, you know, he's not a singer like Paul McCartney. But gosh, those early recordings, I mean, he had something to say.
Yeah.
And when you have somebody who has something to say, whether it's Aretha Franklin, R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me, or whether it's Bob Dylan. If you got something to say, people will connect. And it's not, you know, if you're an artist, if you're a painter, who gives a poop if you're using a brush or a roller or, you know, spray paint? If you're coming up with something great and you got something to say, that's all that really kind of matters.
Yeah, and here is another example of just what you're saying. I remember when, and we had this conversation before, but it bears mentioning again, back in the late 70s, early 80s, Ricky Skaggs was shopping the different doors in Nashville that would sign him to a record deal, and each one of those doors closed because they didn't like the idea that he was combining bluegrass with popular country music. Well, Epic Records heard it. Somebody there said, wait a minute, this This sounds fresh. You do have something to say. He got signed, and then the next year, guess what? Everybody was trying to find a Ricky Skaggs clone.
Right.
So, you know, it's really a crapshoot, Slim. I know that people want to sound like other people, and we are relentless in putting people into categories. Oh, so-and-so is going to make it because she sounds like Beyonce. Or this guy is going to make it because he's another Robert Glasper. And they don't get it that what we're all looking for is somebody to do you.
You know, I agree to a certain extent. I think people want something that's at the same time familiar and at the same time different. You know, they want to have something where they can go, oh, you know what, that reminds me of so-and-so, but wow, it's so different than that. You know, they want to hear something that's familiar and also unique at the same time. They want to have that, you know, both. And I think a lot of the artists, you know, come out, you know, and all of a sudden, like a Norah Jones will come out and you'll say, you know what, she sounds kind of like, but not really, but she sounds familiar, like likable, but, you know.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. People do need the familiar turf, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, if you start listening to some of the avant-garde jazz, I mean, I've never really been a big fan of that. It's just so unique and so different that it's like, you know what, it's hard to listen to.
Well, you know what, though? In Glasper's case, he combines what is, I don't think he necessarily calls it avant-garde, but he combines that with a fleshing out in the song of going back to a more melodic situation, because he's drawing from hip-hop sources, he's drawing from jazz sources, and his classical background. So when you have something like that, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. It's just like I was talking about with my friend George Hazelrigg. There's a guy that's doing a jazz piano trio doing Hendrix and classic rock tunes. It's like you've got the familiarity with the tunes, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, what a different and refreshing take on that. So, I mean, you know what I mean? It's got to be familiar to a certain extent, but it can't sound like somebody else.
Well, as we say, you know, so often on this show, if you can breathe new life into something that has already paved the way, that's a cool scenario to be involved in. If you can, like, I know that Glasper has said somebody's got to kick this collective genre's backside in order to inject some life. He said that a couple of years ago, and it's been the case. But I can see your point about saying that people are drawn to what seems initially comfortable, but yet it sounds different than the way they heard it before.
Right. When
you
give something a little twist that nobody's ever done before, it's like all of a sudden you got somebody's ear.
Yeah, and that's the real genius part of this whole business. If you can find a way to make people pay attention to what you're doing, first of all, you got to be hungry for doing it. And secondly, if you tap into the consciousness of people and what they want to hear or something that may titillate them, excuse me if I use that word. you really have it down. There are so many great, fertile minds in this business, and you got a lot of those in Nashville.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you listen to Hendrix, and he goes All Along the Watchtower, okay, it's a familiar tune. All of a sudden, he takes it and turns it on his ear, and all of a sudden, you got something that's just familiar. It's really different.
Yeah.
At the same time.
And Dylan, you talked about him. He's still selling out places, Slim. That is so crazy, isn't it? That's wonderful. But, you know, for a guy.
I know. I've seen him live. I saw him and Joni Mitchell at the University of Maryland at the old Coalfield House. And, you know, I was just amazed. I mean, Joni Mitchell, I went to see her, and she wasn't so good live.
Really?
But Yeah, I was really kind of disappointed. And I was going to get ready to leave when Dylan came on, and I stayed for the whole set. He was great.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, you know what? This is like one of the coolest conversations ever, because there's a lot of territory that needed to get covered here, and I certainly did not know it was going to be. What I want to make sure people know is why you're coming back to Baltimore, because La Scala is your place to go, but you're doing it for a very special reason. Please tell us.
Yeah, I volunteered at a children's hospital for about 8 or 9 years, and it's a hospital that doesn't get a whole lot of attention or a whole lot of money, so I try to raise money for them whenever I can. So I do these concerts at La Scala, and people get in for free, but they can bring, you know, gift cards and toys and clothing and stuff for the kids in return for a free Slim Man show. And it's been a cause that is important to me, and it's also important to, you know, a lot of unfortunate kids who, you know, have unfortunate health circumstances, and they don't have all the glitz and glamour of a Johns Hopkins, but Mount Washington Pediatric Hospital is doing some great work, and I always try to, you know, link in my concerts in Baltimore to a good cause, which is Mount Washington Pediatric Hospital.
And let me tell you how much I love that hospital, because they, the staffers there were very nice to T, my son. T, when he was in high school, he won a pretty big contest. He wrote about what his experience has been in being considered autistic. Well, he went to the Mount Washington Pediatric Hospital because he was going to get his award, and they loved him up like there was no other kid they had ever seen.
Yeah, I mean they make a difference in children's lives, and children that, you know, are not kids of privilege, and that's a great thing to do.
Oh yeah,
and that's why I always try and include them in my concerts in Baltimore, you know, have a good time and support a good cause at the same time.
Well, and I'll say this because you won't. I mean, the one-stop shopping here is slimman.com. You'll find all the information. And here's what I want to say to folks who need to make reservations at La Scala on the 14th to see you, because, first of all, it's an intimate venue. Secondly,
yep,
there's not anything to get in. You just bring the toy or the donation. All that info is on slimman.com. But God help you if I see you at La Scala and you aren't buying dinner when you're there. God help you, because you need to be respectful to that venue that's opening their doors. You have to partake of dinner at La Scala, because, first of all, you'll thank me later. That is the best dinner you could get.
Yeah, Nino's great. Nino does a great job with the food there. It's the best Italian place in Little Italy. And, you know, do yourself a favor. Have a nice dinner. See a nice show. Help out a good cause.
And I love you for doing this. I wish you could come back more, but I understand how enamored you are of Nashville.
Yeah, well, I mean, I come back, you know, I do 2-3 shows a year in Baltimore, and that's about all they can stand to me, so.
and not to forget Temecula, that's happening this Saturday, right? Is it
this
Saturday?
Saturday at 1 o'clock. I'll be on stage.
And who will you be with?
I will be with a saxophone player named Rodney Taylor, a drummer named Patrick Reddy, and a keyboard player from the Philippines who I've never played with before, who has one of the most unusual names I've ever heard. His name is Tatang Katindig.
What? Because that's right.
Yeah, really. And so it's a band. I've played with two of the three guys before. The keyboard player I have not played with before, but I always like playing with different musicians. They always have a little different take on the music. It's always good to, you know, make new friends, musician friends, number one. It's always great to hear someone do another take on your music.
Oh, it'll be wonderful. And I know it'll be a much more intimate setting at La Scala. And by the way, I'm making my reservation because I don't want to be left out. Last time I was left out and I was so bummed. So I'm making that today.
I mean, they do, reservations are recommended for La Scala on May 14th. And it's,
yes.
The show starts at 6:30. It'll probably go to 9:30 or 10. Or even later, depending on, you know, how many folks are left. I like to play as much as possible, as long as possible, because, you know, I love playing music, and I don't sit there and look at the clock and go, okay, it's 9:30, time to quit. I'll play as long as there are folks there.
Well, nobody's going to be waiting to use the bocce ball court or anything, are they?
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of cool that a restaurant actually has a bocce ball court indoors.
I love it.
It's also kind of cool that they kind of make it into a little concert area for the Swim Man Show.
Yeah, that's so crazy. Well, I definitely will see you. I'm making it a point to have T remind me to call to make the reservation. So we'll see you on the 14th. I just love that you had the time to spend with me today, hon. This is very good.
Trish, I love talking to you, and you know I love you, darling, and I hope to see you when you come out on the May the 14th, and we'll have a glass, have a dish, and hear some music, and have some fun, and all for good cause.
It will be all for a good cause. And now you need to befriend a gentleman that I just befriended. His name is Rich Fagan. He lives in Nashville. He's a prolific songwriter. And when I come to Nashville to visit, we're going to get a group of friends together and hang for a night. Is that cool?
All right. Sounds great.
Okay. Thank you, baby. Thank you for the time.
Thank you for everything you do, and thank you for supporting the music. I mean, you do a great, great job. You're such a wonderful interviewer, and I always love talking to you.
God bless you. Well, I love talking to you. You're one of my favorites. You're the person that has done the interviews the most out of everyone I know.
Trish, I appreciate it. I really do. You do, you know, like I say, it's not easy for you to do what you do, to wade through all the stuff, to give your people the good stuff that you seek and that you admire.
Well, and speaking of which, we are going to close this hour with one of the things I admire most, which is one of your songs from Slim Man Live. You know how much I love For Now and Forever.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of a crazy story. We've been doing these shows in California, and almost every one we do is recorded by a guy named Paul Doty, and he just knows the music so well, and he does such an excellent job doing the recordings, and he sent me a stack of CDs last year, about 25 CDs or so of shows from the last 15 years, and it was just amazing that he recorded these things, just two-track mixes. In other words, you can't turn up the voice or turn down the bass guitar or turn up the drums. It's just the way that he recorded it. And just we put them all out on the Slim Man Live CD, and sounds great. And For Now and Forever is probably one of my favorite tunes off of that CD.
And
George Hazelrigg plays piano, which is a real treat.
This is how shrewd of a businessman you are, because when we visited, when 1,000 Miles Away first came out, you included this song on 1,000 Miles Away as a way to whet the appetite for the new live CD that was coming out, but you really didn't know it was going to at that time.
No, I really didn't. I just said, here's from the new CD, if it ever comes out. But the good surprise was that when I got that whole huge stack of CDs of live recordings, I knew that I had more than enough stuff to put out the Slim Man Live CD. So,
that's
yeah,
awesome.
For Now and Forever is on the 1,000 Miles CD as a bonus track, and it's also on the new Slim Man Live CD.
That's great, and it means a lot to a lot of folks. Would you do this when you come to Baltimore at La Scala?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I'll probably just do it sitting down at the piano.
Awesome.
Me solo, sitting there singing and playing a song.
Oh, I'll be weeping into my wine. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Slim. We'll see you on the 14th. Take good care. Hey, listen, make sure you slay them at Temecula.
I will do that, Trish Delish.
All right, you.
All right, hon. Love you.
Love you, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Slim Man. And if you have never heard this song, it is 5 minutes of ear bliss. Okay? For now and forever, Slim Man Live on Hyper Jazz.
Long to tell you how I feel. I felt this way the first time I looked into your eyes. I knew it was love, knew you were the only one for me. From now until forever, with you I want to be. With every night we'll start our life together. So just give me your hand, for now and forever, and I give you my heart, forever and more, for the rest of our days, for now and forever, with you. The two of us together, no matter what may come our way, we will be standing side by side to see it through. Now until forever, with you I want to be with him. Start our life together. So just give me your hand, forever, and I give you my heart, forever and more, for the rest of our days, for now and forever. So just give me your hand, for now and forever, and I give you my heart, forever and more, for the rest of my days, for now and forever, with you.
This is Hybrid Jazz.
There were four generations of love on her face. She was so wise, no surprise, past her eyes. She needed it all. Our child, or about three or four, all day. You can't get to know better.
just had a whammy. Not only the impact of the song as it is, ladies and gentlemen, by Diane Reeves, God love her, but hearing it. The premise was so that we could play something by Diane Reeves today in honor of International Jazz Day, because she's in Istanbul along with the gang at this moment. But I completely forgot that it was Mother's Day. Is Mother's Day this Sunday? Oh, my God. So now, little tears are stinging my eyes. Oh, my gosh. No wonder I've been thinking about my mom, and Beach has been thinking about hers. Griselda has been thinking about her mom. I know that Matt is thinking about his. All the folks who are back and forth in the chat room today. Holy cow. Is that song powerful? Diane Reeves had no idea in 1987 that she would have created this long-lasting song that got into the very fiber of our beings. Better Days, from the self-titled Diane Reeves CD. And you know about Diane because she was on the show. My God, did she have a lot of listeners for that show. A lot of folks just took that show and ran with it. She was real nice and so humble. She really was. She had all these plans cooking, including International Jazz Day, but she wanted to focus on things that were, you know, up and coming, that didn't paint her into a corner as being any kind of diva. There she is with her cousin George Duke and all these other folks that are so thrilled to share the stage with her. If you go to her Facebook page, by the way, John Beasley, who is the music director for this wonderful day's festivities in Turkey, he has info about listening to the show live, streaming. So you know what I'm going to do when the show is over, right? Going to get a little glass of wine and listen to the show up until the time that NCIS is on. All right? That's my big plan. Hopefully you will have a similar plan. Diane Reeves and Better Days. Oh, wait. Mother's Day is on the 12th. Thank you, Griselda. I appreciate that. Good. All right. Have a little bit of time left. Okay. We heard Wayne Shorter, the multiple award-winning saxophonist who has paved the way for so many who have taken what they have learned from him and have created their own kind of jazz, etc. When folks heard Adam's Apple back in 1966, there was a collective intake of breath, because this was one of the finest creations that a jazz man had done. The track you heard was called Tiru. And on the CD, Joe Chambers on drums, Herbie Hancock on piano, Reggie Workman on bass, Wayne doing that special cacophony of sound, if you will, taking the mournfulness that he had experienced in his life, and the hope that there's going to be something better in that mix. That cry, that soulfulness, that hope, that joy, all of that is in Wayne Shorter's playing. This is the album that features the song that launched A Thousand Ships, Footprints. Some people have done this song as an homage to him. But apart from that, the song itself stands on its own, just a masterpiece. Wayne Shorter is 79 years old. He's in Istanbul today. I believe that he is the patriarch of the little family over there. So I'm just tickled to know that Blue Note signed him anew, and he's got a new CD out called Without a Net. Oh, man, when that CD first came out just a couple of months ago, people were just falling all over themselves because he's still playing pretty magnificently. That's wonderful. And we heard Slim Man from the live CD. Isn't that a great song? Man, that is the ultimate wedding song to me. We have discussed this in different kinds of shows. Certainly when Slim Man came to my old radio station a couple of years ago, a few years now, He has been a guest, what, 5 or 6 times? I don't know. But this song, For Now and Forever, just captures the essence of what it means to find that perfect mate. And I can't thank him enough. Seriously, seeing him in person, a different story entirely. He just puts his heart and soul into performance. When you can get him to talk, as we did today, it's great. But sometimes it's a little like pulling teeth to get him to share something personal. Everything gets shared on that stage. It's amazing. I've seen people, I mean, grown men with tears in their eyes, because Slim says, little Timmy, who grew to be Slimmy, says what guys can't say a lot of the time. And, boy, you talk about some couples getting lucky when they get home. Don't even get me started on it. Anyway, I digress. Thanks to Slim for being here. And we're going to play a few more tracks from folks who are in East End Bowl today. You have never heard me play this artist, and it gives me great pleasure to do so. An Israeli clarinetist, saxophonist, and band leader. She is a virtuoso. It is a delight to hear her play. Such passion and joy. This is from something new from Annette Cohen. It's a CD called Claro Scuro. And she pulled a little from the Spanish. She pulled a little from the Italian. What she wanted to convey is light and shade, because her music is that, and a pot of gold, too. This is, oddly enough, a track called The Wedding. And you'll hear instrumentally how it feels like that on Hybrid Jazz, Annette Cohen. Enjoy. Thank you. is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you.
like a little girl having fun in the studio, isn't she? Esperanza Spalding. Oh, my. From 2008. Yes. That was her second album, self-titled Esperanza, and a track called I Adore You. And that's what it sounded like. I adore you. Just joy from my Libra sister and daughter, 28 years old. Woo! She was a late signer to this whole International Jazz Day that Herbie Hancock put together. They're in Istanbul as we speak. I don't know who's on the stage right now, but in mere moments I'm going to go check that out. Gretchen Parlato, by the way, in the little voice part of that song. There's a lot of vocals, or vocalization, I should say, going on, but Gretchen had a share in her good friend's beautiful breath of fresh air track there. Little thing or two about Esperanza. And I just found out one of these things today. I knew that when she was four, it wasn't easy for her mom to make a way for Esperanza and her brother. Esperanza saw Yo-Yo Ma on the Mr. Rogers show when she was 4 years old. And she went, oh, I want to do that. Well, what she did was, she, at the age of five or so, was self-taught on the violin, thereafter picked up oboe and clarinet, bass in high school. Yes, she is a multi-instrumentalist, a bass goddess. You know about the awards. I would imagine that there will be a few more this year, and I am really looking forward to see where she's going to be in the mix of musicianship on that stage today. It's going to be fascinating. Esperanza Spalding, right before Esperanza, George Duke. Phase 6, the love theme from the Muir Woods Suite, recorded live at the Montreux Jazz Festival in 1993. With orchestra and Stanley Clark on bass, Chester Thompson on drums, and Paulina DeCosto on percussion. That was gorgeous, was it not? So yes, I am thinking of George Duke a lot today because there are folks from his past that will rekindle a new flame. There will be plans being made today, you can be assured, that the music coming out maybe later this year or in early 2014 is going to be reflective of a whole nother dimension to jazz because of this day. Mark my words. You're going to see it. Anat Khan, a part of that. My, was that tasty. From the new Claroscuro. This beautiful amalgam of the light and shade that Anat had in mind. Beautiful clarinet on there, Jason Lindner on piano, Daniel Friedman on drums, and Joe Martin on bass. Anat had her debut in 2005. She is beloved of Downbeat magazine. She has won the Jazz Journalists Association Award. She has done her share of research into different kinds of jazz and music that she can make her own, and she has. She has got fans. I can't even tell you the number of fans that she has in her relatively young life. She's been playing for a long time. She is a virtuoso. But today, she'll be making a whole new group of them. Woo, I'm so excited. The track you heard was The Wedding. I've got one more track to play. I wanted to leave you on definitely a high note after Esperanza. One more to carry that through. This is Al Jarreau on Hybrid Jazz, also in Istanbul today. Thank you. Thank you, Al, for letting us zip away on that high note, Morning from 1983. And Jarreau, thank you so much for being here today. We'll see you on Thursday on Hybrid Jazz. Happy International Jazz Day. God bless you all. Thanks so much for being here. We'll talk to you soon.